Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of Fake TV Critic, a podcast where I discuss the week's biggest TV news headlines, recap and analyze some of my favorite shows, and let you know what you should be watching. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone who celebrates. If you listened to my Thanksgiving episode last year, you know that I do not like this holiday. It is fake, it's oppressive, and it's stupid. And I think that even more so this year, because I got my free turkey for the first time ever from the grocery store, and I decided, why not just make it? Why not gather my points together, get my turkey, roast my turkey? I officially understand why people who do Thanksgiving are either super into it, because it gives them something to do for like literally a full week, or want to jump off a bridge. Do you know how long it takes to thaw a frozen turkey? Do you know how long it takes to roast a turkey once it is thawed? Do you know like the amount of equipment you need just to get your fucking turkey in shape to go into the oven? Far too much. To quote Latrice Royale from season 4 of RuPaul's Drag Race, the romper room fuckery that is Thanksgiving. Then on top of that, like, you have the history of, you know, like, genocide and theft of culture and all that kind of fun stuff. And I don't like it. I don't like Thanksgiving. I'm going to make a movement that we get rid of it. Because I do not like it. I'm done with it. I'm done with Thanksgiving. I'm especially done with the people who think that I can't start listening to Christmas music or watching Christmas movies until after Thanksgiving. And it's usually the same people who start decorating for Halloween on September 1st. I'm over it. But if you like Thanksgiving, good for you. Happy Thanksgiving. I'm only glad that I can now just start talking about all the Christmas shit. And one of the Christmas shits that I'm going to talk about is the big news story of the week, is about Christmas movies. And I'm sure you've heard about this because it went very viral. That's not a real thing. You can't go very viral. You're viral or not. But regardless, it was spread far and wide earlier last week. This interview that Candace Cameron Bure, DJ Tanner from Full House and Fuller House, and the self-proclaimed Queen of Christmas at Hallmark, even though we all know it's actually Lacey Chabert. I'm sure I've talked about this before. She left earlier this year to go to what was GAC, GAC, but is now GAF, GAF, which is even more ridiculous, which is a new network that was started by Bill Abbott, who used to run Hallmark Channel. So Bill Abbott is, you may have heard his name too. He's the guy who pulled the Zola ads off of Hallmark in 2019, I think it was, 2018, one of the two, because it had a lesbian couple in it. And then they got all that backlash and blah, blah, blah. So he was running the joint at that place. And then he got fired and they hired a black woman to replace him. And they're the better for it, because so far the stuff that Hallmark has been doing since Bill Abbott left is so much more entertaining and satisfying and fun to watch. So he started Great American Country, which is now Great American Family GAG. What could that G stand for? GAC, GAF, GAG. Anyway, he started the... I'm loopy. He started this new network, and Candace Cameron Bure was his first big like poaching from the Hallmark Channel, and she's an executive now at this channel. So it's not just that she's on-air talent, she's also like helping to program. So a couple other Hallmark people like Danica McKellar, who was Winnie on The Wonder Years, Jen Lilly, and some others, Trevor Donovan, who is currently on Dancing with the Stars, or got kicked off Dancing with the Stars this week, rather. They went over to the GAF. So this week, Candace Cameron Bure did a little interview with, I don't know if it was Variety or Hollywood Reporter, or if it was all of them and it was like a press junket, I'm not sure, where she said that Great American Family was going to be focusing on, quote, traditional marriage in their films, so they would not be featuring interracial couples or LGBTQ couples. Now, I don't know if you've been paying attention ever, but that is a dog whistle traditional family is not a real thing. It's just not, for many reasons. One, what she is saying is a married couple that is male and female with children. That idea of a traditional family is literally younger than probably your grandparents. It dates back to World War II and the 1950s. It is not real. This idea of masculine, feminine, men go to work, women stay home, we need to have two kids and a place in the suburbs, that idea literally didn't exist until the 50s. Places like Levittown and the suburbs literally didn't exist until after World War II. So this whole idea of the quote-unquote traditional family that she's talking about is not real. So when she says that, what she says is, we do not and will not acknowledge the existence of anyone who is not straight, white, and Christian. We all know that. She got attacked for it online, rightfully so, for basically saying that. And people are just like, okay, well, we know what this means. Like, we know what traditional family means. We're not fucking stupid. What I find interesting is that as a quote-unquote Christian, as she claims to be, traditional marriage biblically is like a man, a wife, and his other wives, or a man, a wife, and their slaves. Or like a dowry. It's arranged marriage, right? Like, that's traditional marriage. Traditional marriage is being sold and being property. That's traditional marriage. Or do you want to go back 100 years when traditional marriage was between a 50-year-old man who was about to die and a 12-year-old girl? Yeah, that's traditional marriage. But regardless of all of that, she then made a statement on her Instagram that was like, my words were taken out of context, because of course she said that, when like, what other context is there, you stupid hoe? And that she loves all people as a Christian, and that she's worked with and celebrates the contributions of people of all races and sexualities and genders. And like, what that means is, I will profit off of you. I will use you for your talents and your abilities, but I absolutely will not acknowledge your existence. That is what that means. And she can go fuck herself. I hate Candace Cameron Bure. Meanwhile, she's making bank off of selling fucking Bibles with her name on them. Like, oh, that's really Christian of you. Aren't you supposed to spread the good news? No, you're selling the good news. I hate her. I really do. And she's gotten a ton of backlash, thankfully. But what this really has done is it's really shown who is worthy of my time, of our time, of your time, and who is not. Candace Cameron Bure, Danica McKellar, Jen Lilly, Trevor Donovan, anybody else who is participating in this gaff bullshit, you do not deserve my support. You do not deserve your advertisers do not deserve my money or my eyes on your product. You can all go straight to hell. I will not be watching your channel. I will not be supporting your shit. And for me personally, that hurts for one reason. Candace Cameron Bure's co-star in the movie that she made for Gaff this year is my neighbor. He lives literally one street over. When it's winter and the trees are dead, I can almost see his house from my living room. His name is Mark Blucas. You may know him from seasons 4 and 5 of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. He was Riley, Buffy's most hated boyfriend, although I really liked him, but that's neither here nor there. He also was on Unnecessary Roughness on USA. He had an ABC show a few years ago called The Fix. He's been in a bunch of these Hallmark movies, most recently Good Morning Christmas with Allison Sweeney. He was in Miss Christmas, which was my favorite of 15 or 17, one of the two. And he lives in New Hope, Pennsylvania, which is famously one of the gayest towns in America. If you search gayest towns in America, You know, like, you might get some lists that are, like, cities, like New York and L.A. and San Francisco and blah, blah, blah. But, like, of the gayest small towns in America, we routinely rank in the top three next to Provincetown and Fire Island. And Mark Blucas is my neighbor here. So I would love to know what the fuck he is thinking right now, starring in this movie, hearing his co-star and seeing his co-star being blasted to hell and back over these very clear views that are homophobic. I would love to know what he thinks. Maybe I'll drive by his house and do a little beep beep. Like, Marky Poo, what up, girl? Where are you at with this? That pisses me off personally. Anyway, that was the big news this week, was that Candace Cameron Bure is the fucking Grinch. All right, what else happened this week? The White Lotus was renewed for season 3. I have very much been enjoying season 2. I'm sure I will do a recap probably when the season ends, like I did with season 1, which, by the way, is my most listened to episode ever, is my recap of The White Lotus season 1. I don't know why. I mean, I listened to it back once. And I was like, ooh, I was really lucid during this episode. I made some points. Maybe that's why. Maybe I made some good points. People shared it. I don't fucking know. Maybe everyone just wanted to listen to the White Lotus podcast last summer. I really don't know. But it got renewed for season 3. Season 2 is currently airing. It's about halfway over right now. It is set in Sicily. The first season was Hawaii. The third season, we're going to a new White Lotus somewhere. And there's no details been released, although everything is saying, like, don't be surprised if Jennifer Coolidge comes back, which, like, we should be so lucky. I love me some Jennifer Coolidge. I love Tanya. I'm loving this season. I hope you're watching it. It's really interesting. It's on HBO. If you're not watching it, catch up over this Thanksgiving break when you have a little bit, hopefully you have a little bit of time to do so. Okay, that's it. That's all the news that I have for this week. And like I threatened, however you want to look at it, last week, I am talking about this week, The Santa Clauses, the first two episodes on Disney Plus, and A Christmas Story Christmas, the sequel to A Christmas Story, which is now streaming on HBO Max. Okay. Now, I don't really know how to start with this subject. As you know, if you listen to this podcast, I've said it many times, I operate on coffee and nostalgia. And that should have been the name of this podcast. It should, like, I know I started Fake TV Critic as a Twitter and a blog years and years ago, so it was like a natural extension for the, I should have called it Coffee and Nostalgia, because that's all I talk about is nostalgia, and it's while I'm hopped up on caffeine on Sunday mornings. But both of these things that came out this week are not only hitting on a nostalgia for my childhood and for the childhoods of many people, especially Gen Xers and millennials, it's also hitting upon the nostalgia of the holidays, which, like, why not get a twofer? Why not get more bang for your buck? If you're going to go nostalgia, why not also be do a Christmas nostalgia or a Halloween nostalgia? Hocus Pocus 2 did it over Halloween. You know what I mean? So how do I want to put this? I have such fond memories of these things from my childhood. And I'm the kind of person who, like, is never satisfied with that alone. Because I'm a greedy person. I am never satisfied just having the nostalgia of the thing from my childhood or my teenage years or college or 2 weeks ago when I was happier than I am now, or whatever the case may be. I want the nostalgic feeling and I want more. And that is exactly what both of these things are giving us. Now, sometimes the nostalgia is enough. Sometimes going back to that thing that you love works well enough, either because you are anticipating it and or you've been anticipating it. Like Hocus Pocus 2. We waited 30 years for that sequel. It was something we'd been hoping for and praying for and hearing about that we were going to be getting for so many years, and it finally happened. And that finally happening was enough to make Hocus Pocus 2, for me, enjoyable enough. That payoff is great enough that it finally happened, that any other shortcomings that that finished product may have can be overlooked or forgiven. You know, Hocus Pocus 2, I'm sure I'll watch it next year probably again, and I'm going to be like, oh, okay, this is not that good. But watching it this year, I loved it. I didn't think they could have done much better with it. I thought they honored the original enough, but also did its own thing. They replicated enough of the original while doing their own thing. It felt like a natural extension to do a 30-year later thing. And I overlooked a lot of things that other people did not. And sometimes that's okay. But sometimes nostalgia can be tricky in this way where, like, the memory and love we have for that original thing is so great and so ingrained in us that any attempt at recreating it is going to fall completely flat. And sometimes our nostalgia for a thing is so closely tied to a certain time and place that we can't go back to, that too much time has passed since then, since that time and place, that any attempt to update it or bring it into this new generation is, like, not smart. It's foolish. It's foolhardy. A Christmas Story is more the former. The Santa Clauses is more the latter. So A Christmas Story is more that they're trying to recreate this thing that is ingrained in us, that is a part of our culture, that is a part of our collective memory. So it's never going to be that great because they're just replicating it. Or they're just trying to recreate a feeling or a story or whatever. That's A Christmas Story Christmas. The Santa Clauses is this thing that I'm now realizing as a 34, almost 35-year-old who grew up with that movie and still returns to it at least once a year, that it is so tied to the time of the mid-90s and so tied to myself at that age of, like, 6 through 8, when I was really, truly, like, watched it on repeat, like, it would end, I would hit rewind and watch it again. It's too tied to that time that we are too far removed from, that every time they try to go back and recreate, not even the story, but just the magic of it, the spark of the original Santa Claus movie, they can't do it. That's the Santa Clauses. So let's talk about these separately. Let's start with the good. A Christmas Story Christmas is the better of these two. It's currently streaming on HBO Max. It was released last Thursday, the 17th. And okay, I don't even really know how to approach this, so I'll give you some background of how I obviously have seen A Christmas Story. I am fully aware of its cultural impact. I am fully aware of the place that it holds in so many people's hearts and traditions. For me, it's a thing that I know is there. I have seen it. I acknowledge it. I recognize its importance and the feelings that people have for it. It doesn't hold a hugely special place for me. I like it. It's fine. I don't hate it. But when I think, like, for me last year, I think I don't not think, I did a full episode of, like, where you could stream all the things that were my favorite Christmas things growing up and that I still love to go back to. And for me, those things are, like, The Santa Claus, Home Alone, Home Alone 2, Jingle All the Way, The Grinch, A Charlie Brown Christmas, like, the 90s Nicktoons specials, those kinds of things. For me, it's not A Christmas Story. Like, if it's on in that 24-hour marathon that TBS and TNT do, maybe I'll put it on the background for a little bit because my family used to do that. Like, my uncle used to, at 8 o'clock on Christmas Eve, the station would change from whatever my grandparents had it on to A Christmas Story. So it has, like, it's not something that I am in love with or obsessed with or crave around the holidays the way everyone else does. I get that it has proliferated through our entire Christmas culture. Like, the image of Ralphie in the pink bunny suit is part of our Christmas tradition now. Getting pushed down the slide by Santa is part of our Christmas tradition. You'll shoot your eye out is part of a cultural lexicon, right? I completely understand its importance, but I have no attachment to it. That being said, I was still very much looking forward to this sequel because how can you not? It's been 40 years. Peter Billingsley, the original Ralphie, has finally agreed to return. We've had all of these attempts to like recreate or replicate the original in a sequel, A Christmas Story 2. I don't know how many people have even seen. I haven't. I know it's streaming on HBO Max as well. It was like a direct-to-DVD movie maybe 10 years ago, I want to say. 20 years ago maybe at this point. A stage musical, which I do enjoy, but is very shallow, which they then turned into a live television musical a few years ago with Matthew Broderick and Maya Rudolph and Jane Krakowski, with music by Pasek and Paul, who won an Oscar for The Greatest Showman and have also written Dear Evan Hansen and some other things. It's everywhere. And when something is such a part of our annual traditions and cultures in America, you don't need to love it or be fully attached to it to recognize and to look forward to it. So I was looking forward to it in that kind of general, like, this is signaling something new, the coming of the holidays, but also, like, again, this idea of nostalgia. It's at a time when we, like, for the past couple of years, especially with the pandemic, but even before that with, you know, the political divide and everything, which I mentioned, you know, with the whole Candace Cameron Bure thing. To have something that taps into a childlike wonder and nostalgia and longing for a time that was simpler and easier, I am always down for that. So A Christmas Story Christmas takes place 30 years after the original. So it's set in the 70s. And Ralphie is now a grown-up. He's living in Chicago, trying to be a writer. And he's failing miserably, trying to sell his sci-fi novel that is, you know, a big old doorstopper of a novel. And he's made a deal with his wife, who's played by Erin Hayes from Kevin Can Wait and some other things, that if after a year he doesn't get published, he'll go back to work doing whatever the hell he does. I don't remember. And right around Christmas, he's on deadline, basically, of like, if I don't get published by the end of the month, which is also the end of the year, I have to go back to work. So he's looking forward to his parents coming in for Christmas, and then he gets a call from his mother that the old man has died. So instead of them coming in, they go back to Indiana. Hammondson, I think it is. Hammond, something like that. Whatever, it's Indiana. He goes back to Indiana to the old house on Cleveland Street and basically tries to tap into his father's love of Christmas and give his children the same kind of Christmas that his father gave him as a kid. Which means it's basically a way of the writers and producers setting up almost scene for scene recreating the original movie. You know, oh, we need to take the kids to, Higby's department store to meet Santa. We need to build the snowman. What's the gift that we're going to give? And like basically recreating the original movie, which, because the original is so ingrained in pop culture and our collective memories, it really hammers home how flat this new movie is, and it makes it feel more like a grab at either money or success or viewers or whatever than if they had tried to tell a more original story of Ralphie as an adult. It's too much a remake of the original to stand on its own, which, I mean, it's okay. The original's great. So you could do worse than trying to present essentially the same story, just in a different time period. But then if that's the case, why does this movie need to exist? You know, if we're going to keep returning to this, to the original and all these incarnations of it, why make this movie? You know, like I said, we already have a stage musical, a live musical. We already have this like weird sequel. You know, why do we need to then make this sequel with the characters grown up, and why now? You know, it helps that it's like a really sweet and innocent time when, like I said, so much stuff sucks right now and life is so hard. And like that, if that's what you're looking for, I can recommend this movie. Is that like it is a very sweet and unchallenging movie. it's 100 minutes of like solid background entertainment. It's an easy distraction from all the shitstorm that is the world right now. But you could also just rewatch A Christmas Story. Do you know what I mean? You could watch it for a full 24 fucking hours. And you can get that same feeling, maybe more, because it's the actual thing that you're nostalgic for, not an approximation of it. So then, like, I'm watching this, I'm like, why did they make this? Why did they do this? And I really don't have an answer. Like, there are some really good scenes, I'm not gonna lie. Like, I don't know, the snowball fight after their car breaks down is really cute and ends really funny and silly. With Ralphie pelting his kid in the face with a snowball and then like feeling like he ruined her life because of it. That's funny. And also harkens back to the you'll shoot your eye out because he hits her in the eye with a snowball. But again, so again, it's like it's recreating but changing, but essentially still the same thing. We have the fantasy sequences. There's a mildly entertaining one toward the beginning where Ralphie pictures himself winning a Pulitzer. There's like another Western one because of course there is. We see all these characters come back and like sidebar Farkas grew up to be fucking hot. Who knew? But like it's not really until the end of the movie that A Christmas Story Christmas really like hammers home why it exists on its own. And I'm not gonna lie, the ending really made me feel more positive about this movie than I did as I was watching it. Like I'm watching like, oh, this is okay, but then I'm also like kind of on my phone and I'm like paying half attention, and then it'll get to like the Higsby scene where Ralphie's daughter is talking to him and I'm like, oh, this is cute, and I would watch it. And then I would go back to like, you know, checking my email, and it never really fully held my attention because so much of it was just a recreation of the original until the end when Ralphie has these moments where he's trying to write his father's obituary and he can't do it because he doesn't know how to boil a man's life down into a couple of paragraphs for public consumption like an obituary, which is a very real someone who recently wrote an obituary, I'll get to that with my recommendation for the Hallmark Countdown to Christmas movies, is very understandable. So instead of writing an obituary, he ends up writing this like memory essay about his father and the Christmas traditions. And he puts it aside and he starts to like feel better about his father's passing and like where he is and all that. And then at the end of the movie, which like spoiler, but so if you care, like skip ahead a couple minutes, but it is like the whole reason I end up liking this movie. So his wife finds this essay that he wrote about his father and sends it to the local paper instead of the obituary, and they publish it. And the whole town basically rallies behind Ralphie, you know, and says how much they love the story and how much they loved his father and how great it is. And the paper gets such a positive response that they end up hiring him. So in a roundabout way, Ralphie does make his goal of becoming a writer at the end of the year. And they're going to syndicate a column by Ralphie nationally, including in Chicago. And it ends by basically making the stories he's telling the original A Christmas Story. So like what A Christmas Story is with the narration, we then realize that this story, that the whole story of A Christmas Story Christmas is Ralphie becoming the person who narrates A Christmas Story. So A Christmas Story, the original, they really connect it in that way of like that making A Christmas Story Christmas, not just a sequel, but also a prequel. Because we get the narration from A Christmas Story. And like, I thought that was very sweet and was kind of an emotional gut punch that I wasn't expecting in a lot of ways. And I really liked that they did that. I thought that was very smart and made my whole opinion of the movie change. But I if you're a fan of A Christmas Story, I can't recommend this movie enough. Like if you are one of the 24-hour marathoners, if you grew up with this, like if you're a Gen Xer who grew up with this movie, who made this movie into what it is, because it was not all that popular when it came out originally. And it hasn't been until like home media and television viewing, much like It's a Wonderful Life, made it popular and part of our cultural, our cultural lexicon, I guess. I already said that earlier, but you know, it's true. Part of our like our collective cultural memory and tradition. If you are part of that generation who made this movie into that, you will like this because Ralphie is now your age, has kids around the age that you may have kids, and maybe you've lost parents or are thinking about what will happen when you lose your parents. So it's going to be very relatable and also tapping into the nostalgia and also reminding you of this original thing. So maybe that's why this exists, is because it's for those people. And I'm not quite part of that generation. I'm a little younger than that, but it is. This movie was so relatable for so many people of a certain age in the 80s who grew up at this time of, you know, the popular Christmas toy and the visiting Santa and this like nostalgia of a simpler time, only now we're just, you know, nostalgizing a different time period. But when this movie came out, it was for that time of the 40s and 50s. So now we're just making that for a new generation. And maybe that is enough reason for something like this to exist. You can decide for yourself. For me, I probably won't return to this movie as often as I return to the original A Christmas Story. And even then, like I said, I don't return to that one all that often. So like this was not for me, despite, you know, my general excitement for it to see what it would finally be. It wasn't really for me, and that's okay. I enjoyed it enough. You watch, you decide for yourself if you, because like, again, it's, I'm stuttering because I don't really know how to, it's Peter Billingsley. He is just as charming as he was as a child. It's that family dynamic. It's lots of Midwest jokes. It is a lot of what we love about the holiday season condensed into movie form. And it's warm and fuzzy in that way. So it's worth your time for that alone. But like, does it ever go beyond that? I don't know. The original obviously did because it struck such a chord. I don't know if this one does. One that definitely does not, switching gears, is The Santa Clauses on Disney Plus. So The Santa Claus, the original movie, is, I go back and forth if it's this or Home Alone, that is my all-time favorite Christmas movie. I love the original The Santa Claus so much. It holds such an enormous piece of my heart, and I don't really know why. But like when I was a kid, we had this on VHS, and I used to just, between this, Home Alone, Jingle All the Way, all three of those, I would watch it, rewind it, watch it again, rewind it, watch it again, just all day long. When I was sick as a kid and I had like sick days home from school, I would watch The Santa Claus. That was the one that I went to for comfort, like, well, until I was probably about in high school, that if I was sick around the holidays, I would watch The Santa Claus on repeat on VHS. And I just love it so much. And part of it is because it tapped into so much of that magical feeling of Christmas that I had as a kid. But it was still grounded in the real world. Like, at the root of The Santa Claus, the original from 1994, with Tim Allen, Wendy Crewson, Judd Reinhold, Eric Lloyd, David Krumholtz, wonderful cast. But at the end of the day, what that story was a very grounded, realistic story of a broken family coming back together at the holidays through literal magic, right? It was Tim Allen's character, Scott Calvin, who is divorced, a corporate hack, has no idea how to be a father to his son. He's so bad at being a real person that it takes being a fictional character like Santa to have him tap into his own humanity. And there is something very deep and relatable about that message that has always resonated with me and is a lot of the reason why I love Christmas time and the holidays so much, is that this is a time of year when, for some reason, people are just nicer in a lot of ways. I mean, it does, don't get me wrong, it brings out the worst in a lot of people. Like, when I was younger, going to the mall at Christmas was a literal hellscape. You know, people trampling each other on Black Friday is not a good look. But beyond that, just like the warmth and happiness that the holiday season brings to so many people, and the sharing of affection and love and kindness that we show people at the holidays is so heartening. Even if it's just like people are more apt to nod and say hi rather than just look past you or ignore you, like in a grocery store or whatever. That when you call a business, or like when I personally answer the phone at work, there's I have more of a smile in my voice around this time. Like if it's the music, which is literally designed to make us happy with its very structure. it's a literal thing. You can look it up of like that Christmas music is by its literal design made to make us happy based on like major scales and shit like that. The lights and like seeing beauty and I don't know. Like the Santa Claus, the original, tapped into that. And it showed a man who was so bad at showing emotion and being present and loving his child, showed him not only being able to love his child, but to love everyone, children all around the world. And, you know, it's wrapped up in like a funny, shiny bow and with comedy and all that stuff. But at the heart of it, it is about a man rediscovering his love for his family and for people at Christmas. And that idea has never carried through to the rest of the movies. Now, I mentioned earlier, like part of that I think is because the Santa Claus, the original, came from the mid-90s and it was a very different time. Think what you want of the 90s. It was the last great decade. I stand behind this. There were so many jobs. There was so much money. Like, there was obviously bad things. AIDS was running rampant. Whatever. But, like, not whatever. But, you know, like, there was other stuff happening. But people had, period. People had jobs. People had money. People had excess. It was just generally a better time. And, like, when we talk about these simpler times, it really is the last of the simple times because of 9/11, like collectively breaking us as a generation, as a people, as a country. And then just the hellscape that the world has become since then with like social media and the internet and like recessions and inflation and the Trump and all this like crazy shit that has happened since the Santa Claus came out, that like, we've really been robbed of a lot of our national innocence since that time. So, like, it's a time we literally can't return to, right? But even beyond that, like, the Santa Claus 2 and the Santa Claus 3, both of which I enjoy for what they are. The Santa Claus 3 is embarrassing, I'm not going to lie. And the Santa Claus 2 isn't very good, but, you know, it's a sequel to a thing that I love. So I will watch it every now and then, like, not every year, not even every other year, but, like, every once in a while, I'll watch it. But the problem, and this is very much amplified because I'm getting around to it, the TV show The Santa Clauses, is that the focus has always been on the magic, like the literal magic, like the Santa Claus lore, the North Pole, the reindeer, the elves, that they focus so much on that they lost the reality. Like once Scott Calvin became Santa Claus and we lost that first year, like the year between the original, like, when in the original, the beginning sequence where as Scott, he and Charlie go on this night around the world as Santa. And then that year where he starts to become Santa and his first year as Santa, fully as Santa. That's the first movie. Once we lose that grounding in reality, we lose that year of transformation. It's just a silly children's thing, you know? Like, then it's just this like over the top magic story. And like, that's where it lost a lot of its heart for me. It became like a cartoon, like a live action cartoon. And that's not as much what I'm interested in, but that is what it is. And that's what the Santa Claus is. It's too much focus on like all these kids playing elves and like these magical characters and like slapstick humor and like cartoonish over the top silliness. That's, and like these bright colors and CGI. And that is not what ever made the original Santa Claus so relatable and so wonderful. And why, and the thing that is what makes it my favorite Christmas movie. Like, it's the same thing with Home Alone. Like, it's and Jingle All the Way even. That like, these things that I love so much from my childhood that are my favorite are these things that have like fantasy elements, but they're grounded in reality and in real sentiment. There's no longer a reality in the Santa Claus world. And in the Santa Clauses, which again is airing on Disney Plus, new episodes come out on Wednesdays. The first two are out now. It's a half an hour series. And basically in this, the world has started to lose its belief in Santa and its love for the holidays. And that is making Santa's life hard. And he is now facing retirement because of it. And there's a clause in this contract, which we've seen several times over, the Mrs. Clause, the Escape Clause. Now here is the successor, the Sussex, whatever it is, clause, that basically is an out for Santa to name a replacement if he doesn't want to be Santa anymore. And that's kind of the place we're at, is that Scott is going to retire and he needs to name a replacement. And we have like a slew of candidates. We have his own son, Charlie. We have his son with Mrs. Clause. What's his name? Cal, I think. And then we also have these other candidates from the outside, like Cal Penn is playing a like an Amazon magnet type, who has SC initials as well, who maybe is going to be a replacement, or maybe because it's clauses, they're going to share the job. We don't know. But like within this framework of like, there is a real story to be told there. Right? Of like people losing their love for the holidays, of like becoming so consumed with how terrible the world is that we can't just enjoy this time of year. That's a very real story to be told. And it's, again, very relatable. And this show begins with a really smart connection to the original movie where Santa goes to visit Sarah, who's the little girl from the first movie who sees him the first year. He's lactose intolerant, gives him soy milk the next year. He leaves her a doll, and they have that Merry Christmas, Sarah, Merry Christmas, Santa, that very touching, sweet moment in the first one. That as a grown-up, she's played by Casey Wilson. Love, great casting. From Happy Endings and Gone Girl. Oh my God, a million things. The Bitch Sesh podcast, the Fed Up podcast on Wondery. Anyway, where she's like a disillusioned 30-something-year-old who drinks a bottle of wine every night because she has to sleep on her parents' couch because she can't afford to not live with her parents in her 30s. So, of course, she doesn't believe in Santa or doesn't care about Christmas anymore because her life sucks. Like, that's a very real story to be told and could have been very interesting. But instead of focusing on that, we then get this pivot where now it's going to be about, like, Santa finding his own replacement, and it becomes, like, this space for like bad Tim Allen jokes about the death of Christmas, because apparently it's problematic to say Merry Christmas now, and like bad like Republican Fox News jokes, but then also just like a general, like they're missing the point of why people don't believe, like that first scene gets to the point of why the holiday spirit or the Christmas spirit, whichever you would like to call it, is maybe dwindling, is not because we can't say Merry Christmas anymore. It's not because that's problematic. It's because of how awful the world has become. Like, Merry Christmas being problematic or people viewing it as problematic is not what caused this rift. The rift caused that. Do you know what I mean? And I think the show misses that point, and it's just, it could have been interesting, it could have been fun, but like, again, with nostalgia, this does not feel like it's trying to have its cake and eat it too. It's trying to be a thing for people like me who grew up with this, who will watch it because they grew up with it, and then also trying to appeal to like conservative, Republican, whatever you want to call it, but also to like be flashy and whatever enough for children to enjoy and to distract them and to be like colorful and eye popping. But then like at the end of the day, it's really not appeasing any of these people because it has nothing to say and it has no raison d'etre. Like it's nostalgia for the sake of nostalgia. At least with like A Christmas Story, Christmas, like I was saying, is that, you know, like it's trying to represent a new nostalgia. This just feels more cynical and like a cash grab to me. And like I knew in a lot of ways that's what it was going to be, but I wanted it to be more because I've been waiting for another Santa Claus something, either a fourth movie or like this TV series, since the third movie came out because it was terrible and it sucked. And I was in my freshman year of college and I was in Philadelphia at Drexel and I walked from my dorm at 33rd and Race to the, what was it called? The Arc, I think it was called then, the movie theater on the edge of UPenn's campus at like 40th and Walnut, which like, if you know Philadelphia, not a short walk, especially in like around Thanksgiving, which is when I went. I walked to see this movie because I wanted to see it so bad. And like I think Wednesdays was like my day where I only had morning classes or something. So I walked there in the afternoon and I remember just being so disappointed. And that night we had like our Christmas dinner in the dining hall with like a chocolate fountain and shit, or our Thanksgiving dinner with like a chocolate fountain and shit. And I went and I just was so depressed. I ate by myself in the dining hall after watching this movie that was so cynical and awful and like ruined the legacy at that moment for me of the Santa Claus eating this like shitty Sodexo meal and a 8-foot chocolate fountain that everyone, I just remember being so depressed that Christmas. And I think it literally, like, I mean, it didn't start with the Santa Claus 3, but it didn't help. I forget what I was saying about why I talked. Oh, I've been wanting like something else because of how bad that was. But like, this is only marginally better, honestly. And I'm going to finish it. I want to know where it goes. But like, nostalgia can be a wonderful thing, but it can also just be a very cynical thing. And because it's so lucrative to cash in on people's nostalgia, places like Disney are going to do it just to cash in and not to actually add anything to a conversation or to really appeal to anyone, but just to make that money, honey. It's annoying. Okay. I've been talking forever. Let's get to my Christmas countdown to Christmas recommendation of the week. So for week four, I mentioned last week, there were some great movies this week. I liked many of them. There were four. It was In Merry Measure, The Royal Nanny, Our Italian Christmas Memories, and Christmas at the Golden Dragon. I liked three of the four, and I loved two of them, which is weird. So usually there's like one good one and some like meh, and maybe even a bad one thrown in here and there. I really liked at least two of these. I liked In Merry Measure, which is Patty Murren, who is a Broadway actress, who was also in Holiday for Heroes on the Hallmark Channel. That's on the regular Hallmark Channel. And I really enjoyed that. She's like a former pop star who comes back home and like ends up leading a choir and falling in love with her former arch nemesis from high school. That was a really cute movie. Patty Murren was great. The script was really fun, really smart. And but the one I'm recommending is, for the first time, a Hallmark Movies and Mysteries movie, which this is where they put the movies that aren't romance focused and are maybe like sadder or more focused on ensembles, things like that. And this movie is called Our Italian Christmas Memories, and it stars Beau Bridges giving the greatest single performance I think I've ever seen in a Hallmark Christmas movie or a Hallmark movie in general. And he plays the patriarch of an Italian family who has Alzheimer's, and his grandkids are kind of rallying around him, come back to celebrate Christmas while their mom goes on a trip to Hawaii because she's been taking care of her father who has Alzheimer's. So they kind of rally around him to take care of him, take him to his doctor's appointments, that kind of thing. There's RJ, who is a chef, who's the worst chef. That storyline goes nowhere. We're going to forget that happened. There's Ella, who is queer, has a wife. Hello, hello, hello. I'm listening. And the other girl, whose name I already forget, who's actually the lead, ostensibly the lead, who kind of is an adjunct professor who comes home and like, They also, I'm an adjunct professor as well. The writers don't really know what that means. I think they think that an adjunct professor is like a freelance professor where you just like float around colleges. That's not what it is. You're just by every semester you get a new contract employee. You're a contracted employee. You're not tenured. You're not full time. You're just like, you renew your contract every semester on an as needed basis. But whatever. They go home to take care of their grandfather, and then they realize how bad his memory is getting. So they go on a hunt to find their grandmother's, his wife's, Nona's, recipe for her famous red sauce, which they call sugo, which I have a feeling like they don't understand what an adjunct professor is. I think the writer kind of just looked up, what's the Italian word for sauce? Because no one calls it a sugo. We call it sauce. If you're from North Jersey, you call it gravy. If you're wrong, you'll notice no one called it gravy. My North Jersey friends, no one called it gravy because it's fucking not gravy. Just saying. Anyway, they look for all the ingredients to make her sauce. And they go around to all these places and realize all the lives that she touched. And it kind of starts to help with Nono's memory. But then, and like, you know, obviously they eventually find the recipes. And like, the reason I'm recommending this episode, I might get a little weepy, is one, I am Italian. We all have our quote unquote recipe for our sauce. We all have our own sauce. Here's something that like does not make sense is that they find a recipe. Like they find the recipe for the sauce from the grandmother. And I thought that they were going to maybe avoid this trope because if they were going for reality, no Italian grandma has their recipe written down for anything. None of them. No Italian grandmother has ever written down a recipe in their lives. They have had it passed down to them and they continue to pass it down. And like maybe at some point someone will write it down, but your grandmother, I promise, has never written down her recipe. She hasn't, especially if it's something she makes every week. She's doing it from memory. And she's doing it from feeling. She's doing it from like, and the sauce is going to change. And that's why you don't write a recipe, is that like, you know, if you're using fresh San Marzano tomatoes, they're going to change their flavor. If you're using fresh herbs, you know, there's not one measurement. You might need more or less depending on how pungent, whatever the butcher has. If that day he has really good veal, then you might be using that instead of pork or something. Like there's no actual recipe, okay? Throwing that out there. But they find the recipe. And this year, in August, lost my Italian grandfather, who also had Alzheimer's, like Bo Bridges' character. And he passed away in August at the age of 96. He had a very long, very good life, very fulfilled. He loved his job. He lived in Princeton. He loved the town. He worked for the university. He was beloved there. Everyone knew his name. Everyone knew who he was. He was called Georgie Buck. There are poems written about him on the internet. There are blogs devoted to him. He was a very well-respected and well-loved man who never finished high school. He never went to college. He served in the military in World War II, multiple tours in Europe, in Japan, in the Philippines. And he loved his wife. He got married as soon as he got home. He raised three kids. And he went to work every day, including weekends. He loved what he did. And because of that, he was one of the most fulfilled people I have ever known and probably will ever know. And like I said, he lived a long time and he lived a great life. He had, I think, four heart attacks. He was never supposed to live to meet me. And not only did he meet me, he knew me for 34 years. He got to meet his great-grandkids, my sister's kids. And toward the end, he had Alzheimer's, much like the character in our Italian Christmas Memories. But regardless, my grandfather, fresh off the boat, I think he might have been born in Italy and then came here as a baby, or he was like, his mother was pregnant with him on the boat over, I forget which, but he's first generation and 100% Italian. You know, our last name is very Italian. And he, above all, more than his job, than his family, than his wife, than the Yankees. The thing he loved was fucking pasta. He loved red sauce and pasta. And I could not watch this movie about the search for the ingredients for this perfect family recipe for Italian red sauce without the entire time getting very emotional thinking about my grandfather and how this is the first Christmas we're having without him. And it makes me sad, but also like I have these traditions now as well. And the very last scene when Beau Bridges, they find the ingredients, they make this recipe, and he tastes the sauce and they say, "Grandpa," or "No, how is it?" And you see on his face, like, he lives his entire life in just a few seconds when he tastes this sauce and he remembers his wife and he remembers the years that they had and how much he missed the sauce and he hasn't had it in a decade since she died. And he tastes the love and he's back with his family and maybe even realizes, like, this might be the last Christmas that I get or that I'll remember. And he says, "It tastes like home." And like, Hallmark movies aren't usually this poignant or emotional, especially for me. Like, I watch them because they're so silly. And I was sobbing at the end of this movie. Because that is, again, to wrap up this whole episode about Christmas nostalgia, that is what the holidays are. It's this idea of home, of family, of connection, of kindness, of sharing, of memory. And this movie boils all that down to that one line delivered so perfectly and beautifully by Beau Bridges. And I loved it. So my Hallmark countdown to Christmas recommendation is our Italian Christmas memories. Find it. It's very sweet. Have some tissues. Okay, so it is Thanksgiving week. Let's talk about what's coming out. On Monday, we have the new season of Below Deck. The OG begins on Bravo. On Tuesday, Hulu releases the first episodes of Welcome to Chippendales. On Wednesday, Echo 3 releases on Apple TV+. Peacock, the full series drops of the Pitch Perfect spin-off sequel series Bumper in Berlin, which follows Adam Devine's character Bumper. I'm very excited for that. And the Addams Family series from Tim Burton Wednesday releases as well. On Thursday, the first episode of Criminal Minds Evolution on Paramount Plus drops, which is a continuation of Criminal Minds, but a new format. So instead of like a killer a week, I think it's a full season long arc. And then The Masked Singer is airing a special Thanksgiving episode. And on Friday, we get the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special on Disney Plus, and We Are Here returns to HBO. Hallmark, the countdown to Christmas schedule is as follows. We get one movie on Thursday on Thanksgiving, two on Friday at 6 and 8, three on Saturday, 6 and 8 on the Hallmark Channel, 10 o'clock on Hallmark Movies and Mysteries, and then two on Sunday at 6 and 8. So we're getting a total of eight movies over 4 days. They're trying to kill us. So I'll have maybe a couple recommendations or what. I don't know how I'm going to end up doing those regardless. The finale is Dancing with the Stars ends on Monday. The Vow, Andor on Disney Plus, the second season of Chucky, The Big Brunch on HBO Max as what, Pennyworth on HBO Max, and the season finale of Drag Race UK airs on Thanksgiving. Okay, thank you so much for tuning into this episode, everyone. Again, if you care about Thanksgiving, happy Thanksgiving. If you're like me and you couldn't care less, happy Black Friday if you're shopping, or just happy 8 Hallmark countdown to Christmas movies. All right, thank you for tuning into this episode. I'll be back next week with more recaps, more reviews, more analyses, more discussion and dissection, and more recommendations. I don't even know what I just said, but yep, I have to pee. Have a good one, everyone.